Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't, lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this, because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness, because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working. And then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tons of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. but I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at an age, at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Look, yeah, man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know?
Hold on. On me. I had that kid in my sights, close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you, that let you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
Alright. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're gonna put you on a corner, you could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
All right. Today's Tuesday, April 6, 2022. Is it the 6th? Oh, excuse me, the 5th. It's the 5th. And, all right, we have been going hard like everybody else on the Oscars or whatever, and I haven't watched the Oscars, and I didn't watch it this year either. I haven't watched the Oscars in at least 20 years, but to take a break from all that, today, our podcast is titled, my live stream is titled, Africa, Indiana, Africa, Ohio, and reparations alternatives. Once again, Africa, Indiana, Africa, Ohio, and reparations alternatives. And there is a reparations movement going on throughout the United States. Asheville, North Carolina has a reparations, politically in the works on the state level. Well, no, not even on the state level. On the city of Asheville, North Carolina, on the city level, that's the local level, they've got one in motion in Evanston, Illinois. They've got one that they're working on in the state of California. I don't know if that's for the whole state or a particular city in California. So with reparations, and you know what, a lot of these people have their own definition of reparations, which is not based on slavery at all. All right. However, whether you want it on a local level, state level, or federal level, because there are people that are trying to get stuff on a reparation on a national level, there are alternatives to that. And as we discussed on here before, reparations can take place, I mean, can take form in many different ways. And many of the descendants or many of the people that were actually slaves did receive reparations. And we've gone over that. Not all, but more than you would expect. So if you want to refresh your course on that, you can give us a call at 619-768-2945. But what we're going to talk about today are alternatives to reparations. And that's why I want to bring up Africa, Indiana, and Africa, Ohio. So I'm going straight from Wikipedia. And let me go, well, let me start with Ohio. Okay, Africa, Ohio. Africa is an unincorporated community. Oh, let me open this up all the way. Okay. And these people are way ahead of the curve, too. Africa, Ohio, is an unincorporated community located in the Orange Township of the Southern Delaware County, Ohio, in the United States. History. I'm reading right from Wikipedia. History. Africa is named after the Underground Railroad and is thought to be the only town in the world named after the Underground Railroad. Its first church is thought to have been the Methodist Church that was established on the east side of the Alum Creek in approximately 1828. That's way before slavery was abolished. In 1843, and as I'm reading this, take note of the dates, because the 1828, slavery was in full force. So you had innovative thinking, in my opinion, innovative thinking slaves. That's why I did a series in February this year called Think Like a Slave. Because if you think like these slaves thought, you would have your own town instead of waiting on the government. In any event, in 1843, the slavery question separated its congregation. The anti-slavery portion organized a Wesleyan church on the east side of Alum Creek. The first services were held in a cabin on the Alum Creek Flats near Patterson Residence. In 1876, members of the congregation built a church located in present-day Africa, Ohio. All right, and then I'm not going to read all this, but it's on Wikipedia. Okay. Benjamin Hanby. The Station of the South of Patterson Place was in Westerville, Ohio, hear Benjamin Hanby, and you can read about him. An Oberlin College student heard the story of a sick slave who had told about his sweetheart, Nellie Gray, who had been sold down the river. He wanted to get to Canada and earn money to buy Nellie's freedom, but he died. Hanby began to write a song. Later, a Kentucky slave auction steered him to compose more. He wrote a song. All right, Africa, Ohio today. Alum Creek State Park is an adjacent recreation area in this region in central Ohio, and the park receives over 3 million visitors annually because of the town of Africa is located next to the park and located within sight of the Alum Creek Dam. Many visitors will recognize the town and the road, but many are not aware of the area's historic significance. Africa, Ohio was saluted on the country music television show Hee Haw in 1973. At the time, it had a population of 16 people. Special trip, folks, to Africa, Ohio. And this is something, not 16 people. This is something that you on an individual basis could do today or this year. You know, and you don't have to get 16 people together. Everything starts with one. But, all right, that's Africa, Ohio. Now, let's jump to, and once again, this is something that you can do now in 2022. You don't need to wait for any legislators, no acts of Congress, the mayor to sign off on it, no city councilman or all. This is something, that's what they did. That's what they did. All right, now let's jump to another place right here in the United States, Africa, Indiana. All right, and it's not a whole lot written about this place, but it exists. Africa, Indiana is an unincorporated community in the Ohio township in Spencer County. Okay, it is located south of the town of Rockport. Now, I'm gonna tell you the way I like to do things. This is a gold mine. They don't even have a population listed here. Wait a minute. Yeah, they do. Darn it. Well, it'll be worth the visit. They have a population of over 5,000 people. I like to deal with towns that have under 400 people. But due to the fact that, I stand corrected. Okay, Africa, Indiana is a community within the Ohio Township. In Indiana, it's called Old Township, Indiana. So Africa, Indiana is within this town that has a population of 5,000. So I stand corrected. This is something I would be interested in. Okay. So anyway, it doesn't even have any numbers here. It's got its elevation, but it doesn't have any population numbers. Those are the best towns that don't have any population numbers. All right. When you get a chance, do a road trip to Africa, Ohio, and Africa, Indiana. Now, there's one more, and once again, I call these alternatives. These, if you want reparations, this is something that you can get your due now, while you're waiting for government to come through with a reparations, whatever you think reparations should come in the form of. All right. Now, the last one I'm going to read today has really nothing to do, it's not a reparations alternative. Well, not for black folks. I'll give you this history, and then you interpret it the way you want to. We're going to go down to Brazil now. And there is a town in Brazil, or a community in Brazil, called Americana. Americana, which is in São Paulo, Brazil. All right. And that's spelled like America with an N-A on it. A-M-E-R-I-C-A-N-A, Americana, São Paulo, and that's in Brazil. Once again, this is on Wikipedia as well. Americana has a population of 242,018 people. Let's get the history into it. Now, this is, we call this possibly white folks reparations, okay? Because slave owner reparations, because you did have, there were over 4,000 black slave owners during slavery in the United States. Probably more than that, but at one given time, at least 4,000. All right. The first records on the occupation of lands where Americana now stands date back to the late 18th century when Domingos da Costa Machado acquired a crown property between the municipalities of Vila Nova and Vila de São Carlos, in an area where several estates were created, including Salto Grande and I can't pronounce that name. All right. Here's the important part of this. Okay. In 1866, the region started to be populated by American immigrants from the former Confederate States of America who were fleeing the aftermath of a civil war. The emperor, Dom Pedro II, was a fierce advocate of the South during the war and openly recruited former Confederates, offering free transport, cheap land, and an easy path to citizenship. Now, let's get the facts out here. You did have black folks that were Confederates. You did have, and some of those, and a lot of them were slave owners for various reasons. You know, they got bought their freedom, and then they ended up owning plantations and starting townships or whatever. All right. So this wasn't not, and I've had two Confederates on here before in the past. I'm going to try to track them down. I'm going to not try to track them down and get them back on here. Because I don't even think they know about this aspect of the Confederacy in relationship to black folks. But there were historically black slave owners, black Confederates, and you have black Confederates today. All right, so this is a combination. There were white Confederates and black Confederates as well. Now, so when I'm reading this, okay, think about a black person that owned a plantation or owned slaves back during before slavery was abolished, and then slavery's about to be abolished or it has been abolished. Read it with that mindset. I mean, think about it in that mindset as I read this again. All right. Confederate immigration. In 1866, a region that was populated by American immigrants from the former Confederate States of America who were fleeing the aftermath of the Civil War. So you had former black slave owners along with former white slave owners that they needed to start over again. So according to this, and I'm on Wikipedia, once again, the Emperor Dom Pedro II, who was a fierce advocate of the South during the war openly recruited former Confederates, offering free transportation, or free transport to Brazil, cheap land, and an easy path to citizenship. You did have black Confederates that cashed in on that. All right. Let's see. The first immigrant to arrive was the lawyer and ex-state senator of Alabama, William Hutchinson, who installed himself near the land. Let's see. And then there's, we have it in our scrolling marquee, the Confederate flag, well, their new coat of arms for Americana. And this place, it exists to this day in Brazil. Let's go to the Confederates, okay. The Confederados, okay. Okay, the Confederados, or us Confederados, and I'm assuming that's Portuguese Brazilian, okay, who fled the South, the United States South, during Reconstruction. Matter of fact, let me get you right. The Confederados, or us Confederados, is the Brazilian name for Confederate expatriates and Brazilian descendants of families who fled the South in the United States during Reconstruction. They were enticed to Brazil by offers of cheap land from Emperor Dom Pedro II, who had hoped to gain expertise in cotton farming. Now, who would know better about cotton farming than the actual people who fought black Confederates? Okay. It's estimated that 20,000 American Confederates immigrated to the Empire of Brazil from the southern United States after the American Civil War. Initially, most settled in the current state of São Paulo. They founded the city of Americana, which was once a part of the neighboring city of Santa Barbara de Oeste. I gotta get up on my Portuguese Brazil. The descendants of other Confederados would later be found throughout Brazil. Let's see, history. After the war, many Confederate planters were unwilling to live by the rules imposed by the Union's victory and constitutional changes that followed the end of chattel slavery and a new labor regime, and lost the political power that came with the African-American suffrage. Accustomed to raising cotton with the labor of enslaved people, some looked elsewhere in the Western Hemisphere for a place where their old life could be continued. Many persons who longed for the habit of finally cherished theories had become strongly attached to the institution of African slavery, fancy that in Brazil will find an opportunity for the permanent use of the system of labor. Brazil and Spanish possessions being the only two slaveholding communities remaining in the civilized world, the New Orleans, England, France, emigration to Brazil. Okay, even before the end of the war in 1865, there was already talk of immigrating to Brazil, but very little known about this country. After the war, you know what's interesting? I've had them on this program. There's a gang of people still going to Brazil. In 1865, the Church of South Carolina, the state of South Carolina, formed a colonization society that sent Major Robert Meriwether and D.A. All right, hold on, let me go skip down. Okay. Many Southerners who accepted the emperor's offer lost their slaves during the war, were unwilling to live under a conquering army, or simply did not expect to improve the Southern economic situation after abolitionism. Furthermore, Brazil would not ban slavery until 1888. The Confederates were the first organized group to settle in Brazil. All right, the Amazons, descendants of Confederados. All right. Remember President Jimmy Carter visited Americana.
Mm-hmm.
They still had their Confederate flag. Well, if you ever get down to Brazil, particularly São Paulo, make a side trip to go to Americana. You did have Black Confederates, and like I said, I've had two on here before. I'm going to track them down and get them back on here. Let me see. All right, so let's recap. You've got the town of Africa, Ohio, which exists in 2022. You have the town of Africa, Indiana, which still exists in 2022. Historically, and we're talking about alternatives to reparations, because you can go out and start your own community today. You don't have to wait for the government to give you 40 acres. You can go out and get your own 40 acres today. Historically, you had Africa and Kentucky. Now, this was before slavery was abolished, and they organized their resources, and they bought land in Africa. We're talking about then Africa and Kentucky and Africa and Mississippi. Those were actually former slaves. They were actually born slaves. But there were some people decided to start their own town, thus Africa, Ohio, Africa, Indiana. And some, and I might have to get on a plane myself to do some research, probably go to, because I'm sure in Africa, Brazil's got Black folks who started towns too. So I'm sure some of the slaves that when they did escape, because you had Blacks that did escape to Mexico, Gaspar Yanga escaped slaves. He started a town in Mexico, still exists to this day. So all through, put this way, former slaves via the Underground Railroad, and even before the Underground Railroad, was from Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, in Canada, on the East Coast, to, there was a Black dude that started a town in Alaska, Melvin Dempsey. So from Melvin Dempsey on the West Coast in Alaska to Black townships in Canada, on down in Argentina, Black folks, and we're talking about that many were actually slaves, born slaves. You can still use the same strategy that they did way back when and start your own town, as they did with Africa, Indiana, and Africa, Ohio. But there's several other towns, which I've gone over those over the years. On here. Another one that I've been to this one. Hopkins Park, Illinois. And what these people do is basically they find a town which is kind of, liberal, and they buy some acres of land. Hopkins Park, Illinois, I was there, like, what, 3 years ago, a year before the pandemic. And that's something that, three families started Hopkins Park, Illinois. Two of those families, to my knowledge, well, at least one of those families, one out of three, walked. They had a family of about 13 kids. So with the mom and dad, that's 15 people. They walked. Well, they had a Conestoga wagon. I don't know if they had more than one. But them, the horses that drew that, and whoever was on foot, they started that journey from North Carolina to Illinois. And they must have been in Pembroke, Illinois. Pembroke and Hopkins Park. Hopkins Park is a village within the town of Pembroke, Illinois. It's straight up rural. I spent about 4 hours out there when I was up there because I flew out for the day. But anyway, I think Pembroke has got a population of maybe about 2,000 people, and Hopkins Park might have a population of 500 or 600 people today. But it started off with, I know one family they had maybe like, say, 15 people, but there were two other families who helped put that village together. And all they did was they bought some land and went about it that way. So food for thought. I believe that what I would call alternatives to reparations, because this is something you can do right now. You don't need a committee to do it. Just go find you some place where it's small. Might be remote or semi-remote. And go from there. Okay, 314 area code, your mic is open.
Well, L.A.,
good morning.
Nobody would ever tell you that black plantation owners, refugees, fled to Brazil.
That's
who was for the Confederate cause.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you talk about all these reparation movements. As long as they target that state and local government, I don't see nothing. Well, you know, that's their prerogative. But to try to implement the federal government, which they want to do because they figure they can get paid easier. But see, here's the thing. When you become the majority in a community and you control the government and the services that the government supposed to provide itself, it's kind of dumb to sue yourself. Basically, that's what these reparation movements are. They are suing the government, which is representing the people, which is them, which is asking the government to pay money from them to them. Don't make any sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. But you know what? I think a lot of people don't realize it. I think a lot of people think that the government on any level, local, state, or federal, they think the government has an endless and bottomless supply of money, and all they care about is getting their cut, not realizing, well, that's how Detroit went bankrupt some years ago. You know, social programs are expensive. And somebody's got to pay for it. They don't produce anything. Social services office, all of them are non-productive. You're absolutely right. None of them, all that money that goes out, none of those people pay it back.
Well, see, here's the thing. I mean, let's just walk this through. You're going to impose reparations on a community. Well, who's going to pay for it? It's the people in the community. In particular,
right,
the business people.
And homeowners.
All right. Yeah.
Because you know they're going to raise property taxes.
So how do the business people pay for it? Well, they pay for it from the customer. From the customers, right.
Right.
Now think about this. They're already getting the customers' money. And the customers are pissed off because the level of skills that they have don't derive enough money to buy more from the business. Well, if they get reparations, what do you think they're going to do with that money? Give it right back to the businesses.
Right.
Because they don't know how to produce nothing. And sooner or later, they'd be back at square one as they started off. Is that too hard to figure out?
No, it isn't. However, a lot of the people on the reparations bandwagon, they're emotional in their thinking. They're not logical at all.
You can give them any sum of money, and after a period of time, the people who gave it would have it right back because they don't know jack about producing.
That's true.
So all these discussions, as pitiful as they are, is woe and pitiful me, sound good. But they don't use no critical thinking other than CRT.
Critical race theory.
Yeah, which in essence they want to demonize the white man. So all these reparation movements like you hear in Evansville, Illinois, what's going on with that one? They supposed to provide blacks with funds for housing. Well, first of all, in that equation, you just can't provide blacks with public money. That is totally, totally wrong. If a white person comes in there and wants some public money so that they can buy some low-cost, affordable homes, you got to give it to them if they qualify. And the qualification should be on even basis. Well, that ain't going nowhere because probably the whites were more or less qualified because they have, what, better credit? The ability to forego some of the amount of the loan or the grant by way of down payment. Well, there goes that idea. It's all shot to hell. Do you see how just a dime's worth of critical thinking can forego hundreds and thousands of dollars of wasted efforts?
True, but like I said, most of the people that are at least the talking heads of all this stuff, they're appealing to people on an emotional level because, like you said, let me give two quick examples. The Million Man March, you've had two of those spread out over 20 years. All right. All that money that people spent, let's say a person lived in Chicago and they carpooled or caught a bus with a bunch of other people to go to Washington, D.C., for whatever, a day or two. So all the money that look at it, the buses, the transportation, all that money, just imagine if they got a reparation check. All that money, like you just said a few moments ago, it goes right back into the bank accounts of the people that you've been bad-mouthing, the so-called oppressor. Well, you've been oppressing yourself, because I say bare minimum, black folks spent $50 million to go to we're talking about food, transportation, lodging, all that. You know what? The Patels made more money in the Million Man March than black folks did, for those who know who the Patel family is.
That wasn't nothing more than a big entertainment. And supposedly more money in the Now, if the Nation of Islam, if Farrakhan and them got whatever amount of money that they got out of the Million Man March, what is there to show for it?
That's what I'm saying, and they've had two of them.
Oh, two of them?
Two of them.
Well, they
over
about
20 years
for another one then, right? See, that was a big reaping day for them, a big reparation day. But as I said before, they're not producing anything. See, you know what a company venture will have what's called an initial public offering for an adventure or a new project, a new company. So they tell those that want to get involved in it, it goes out to a limited number of individuals. Say, come on, we think we got something that may work real well here. And they get involved. And then the company gets the involvement in the form of investments. And they just don't take those investments and continue to pay utility bills for the warehouse, continue to pay salary for the warehouse without producing something. Because if you don't produce something, guess what? The money that you obtain will all go away, and you'd be right back at square one, if not, in fact, worse.
You're right.
So the same thing. If you give an individual $400,000 to $500,000, all they're going to do is spend it. And it's going to go right back to the same people, the same concerns that they've been begging. We need some reparations. That's probably why come they don't get it. Because they know those that they're trying to get it from already know.
They can't even agree on the definition. Hold on, Pianki. 407 area code, your mic is open.
I am just so proud of you guys. I am 100%, this is Viata with Soul Purpose Healing. I'm 110% agreement with everything you are. I was laughing at it. It's so true what you're saying. And that's why we love our governor, DeSantis. You know, he has written a bill requiring high school students to take a financial, something like a financial literacy course about managing checkbooks, and all kinds of financial education are being required now in Florida before people graduate from high school. Brilliant, brilliant man we got running this state. And then this is why what you guys were talking about, I believe, is why we have to form our own educational system for families who want their children not to be indoctrinated with over-sexualization and from kindergarten to third grade. That's why our governor had to kick in there and say, no, we ain't going to have that. And Disney's talking about, oh, it's an anti-gay bill. And there's nothing in his bill about anti-gay. All it is limiting what they can teach kindergarten to third grade. And because the CEO at Disney is, I think she's either LGBT, one of those, is promoting that stuff. She's going against this idea of not letting the schools teach whatever the hell they want with over-sexualizing. So you're just pointing out to me the need we have to educate our children and be a watchdog if you got your kids in public schools, because they need what the governor is suggesting. He's putting up the right the boundaries, but if you're not in Florida, the sky's the limit on what they're going to teach our children.
Unless you homeschool.
Yeah, and everybody can't do that. So if you can't find a way to homeschool, then you better be watching everything that's going on in the public school or wherever you got your children in school. Better send them to come to Florida, where at least we got a governor on top of these kind of things. He's not going to allow some of this freedom that they have in other states to just over-sexualize children and teach them whatever the hell they want from kindergarten, to have transgenders, transvestites, everybody coming into the school sharing their values and their beliefs instead of making sense like you guys are talking about. You know, reparations is promoted by people who have a victim mind and a blame mind and an entitlement mind. And like I love what Pianchi said, they're not going to produce anything. You get reparations, what are you going to produce? You're going to give the money right back to businesses and all that. Instead of, so that's why we got to re-educate this society, and especially starting with our youth. I think it's good. Start in high school. Okay, you need to know about finances, first of all. Where should you be spending your money, investing your money, and so forth, so that it benefits not just you and your family, but maybe your community as well. So great conversation. Thank you, guys.
I think we are taking a page out of Dr. Boyce Watkins. One, I don't agree with everything he says, but there's one nugget that he mentioned that, and is copying off of a lot of these immigrant businesses that are in black communities, like a Chinese food restaurant or a liquor store. Typically, or even a gas station or a convenience store, a lot of those establishments or family-based businesses, where you see you can see like three generations, you know, in there, including like little kids. So if you gotta like the ages of your grandchildren, you got them in there. If they're picking up, you know, they're taking that stuff in by observation and limited participation. You know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. So by the time they're 15, they know more than the person who graduated Harvard with an MBA. So
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they not even need to go to college if they teach them the right stuff in high school and they decide, well, I'm going to start my business as soon as I graduate. In fact, if they start practicing entrepreneurship in high school, by the time they graduate, they may have their own lemonade business or whatever they have a passion to do.
Right.
So they won't even need to spend money to go to college. They're going to be so busy making money off their creative mind and energy that was developed in a high school that's more conscious about what they really need to survive in this society. That's what we got to change in our education system.
Right. Well, now.
Well, you guys school my kids to college. Let them kids go to college and learn skills. Higher math, science, physics, things of that nature. Let me tell you something. You got people saying that blacks need to have their own stores. Well, how many stores are you going to have? And then, two, you cannot compete against a Walmart. It ain't going to happen. Walmart has put your target.
Walmart
has put your targets, your Kmarts, and all those other names out of business. Why is that? Well, because they go to where the things on their shelves are manufactured, and they manufacture there because they are cheaper and cannot be manufactured in the United States. And see, here's the thing. Entities would rather deal with one than many. Because when you deal with one, you understand it and you learn it. You know what it wants, its habits, and so on, so on, so on. So an entity would rather deal with providing Walmart with 5 million of any one thing. Black businesses can't go into those entities and say, I want $100,000. Because
okay,
are providing $5 million to Walmart, where they're going to put people to work, they're going to have cash flow, and all those things that's good for business.
Okay, I agree, but we're limiting the minds of our children. My granddaughter has a gift of writing and drawing right now. She's only 7 years old. So I see her becoming an author because she has a passion to draw. Her drawing is getting better and better. So as an artist, and an author, where can she take that? Who knows at this point? She's only 7 years old. But I'm saying if they give them enough stimulation in elementary and high school, who knows? She might become a bestseller. That may be. She doesn't have to open a store. I agree with you. Black folks don't need to open more stores. We got enough consumerism going on. But what is your gift? My grandson, on the other hand, is more athletic. He loves to throw balls. He loves basketball. And he's only 5 years old, going on six. So at this stage, all we're seeing is the gifts they have. How can we develop them? They may not even be interested in college because everybody is not college material. Everybody don't need. But there are some who are geniuses with math and science and all that. Yeah, let's go send you to college and develop you in this area, that area. So we got to pay attention to the gifts these children have at young ages and then watch them develop those gifts as we nurture them and encourage them and give them the tools they need. My granddaughter, we got so much paper in this house that whenever she feels the need to draw and write, she got plenty of paper. She knows where. She got pencils set up, paper set up. Go, honey, go sit down. She'll go over there and, like, she's releasing her stress through her drawing and her writing. The grandson, on the other hand, wants to tear up the whole house and throwing balls around and doing all this. Okay, we better get him outside.
Well, he could start a demolition company.
What you should be introducing your grandchildren is a 3D printer and AutoCAD. Those have taken the place of the things that those kids are playing with today. They don't draw like that. Mm-hmm. They use computers.
3D printers.
They had a bunch of videos on YouTube about that.
And what was the other
thing?
They use
3D printer and AutoCAD. There's a website on the internet called Wolfgang.
That means computer assisted drawing or design.
Yes, don't nobody sit down with pencil and paper and draw nothing no more.
Are you serious? That's development. Bianchi, that's a process of development. Don't say that to kids. Nobody does that anymore. We watch them. That's a process. Life is a process. We don't say, no, 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 you can't do that, but we encourage the process of patience and learning and growing. So, yeah, for now, she's drawing, but she loves that. I'm not going to take that away from her. That's her passion. But as she's ready.
I'm not talking about your child. You do whatever you want to with your child.
Exactly.
I'm talking about
exactly.
In general. Look at the Asian kids.
Who are you talking about?
Look at Asian kids who lead it.
Asian kids are committing suicides by the hundreds. So we can't.
Well, it's a whole lot of them left.
Well, that's nice.
And I'm saying this when you look how they are developed into what it is they want to be. You know, there's a documentary on YouTube. It's about the most dangerous routes to school. And they talk about a lot of different countries, Nicaragua, Mexico, Kenya, and how these kids get up 5 o'clock in the morning and have to navigate their way across plains, savannas, going through forests up the size of mountains. Little girls, three sisters are rowing a dugout canoe on raging rivers to get to the other side so they can go to school. And they got skills that kids in the urban areas don't have. They couldn't survive in those areas. But you know, when they ask what they want to be, you know what they say? They say they want to go to college to be doctors, engineers, and so on and so on and so on. They got skills right now. Wait a minute, they got skills right now. They know how to go out in the forest and get food. They know how to grow gardens. They know how to survive off the grid because they don't have no electricity. All these thousands and thousands, millions of kids from Russia, the Himalayas, Kenya, down in Nicaragua, Brazil, they are doing and meeting these challenges. I mean, I tell you what, going up some of these vertical cliffs, to get on the other side of the mountain so they can come down into the school. They stay there all week. Then they go back home. And their mothers don't know, don't have no idea they got there now. Those kids got more skills than the average American child, no matter what their skin color. And listen to what they say they go to school for.
And a lot of children grow up in families that want them to be doctors, engineers, and make all this, make money and be successful. That's their definition of success. You got to go to school, be a doctor. I've heard that story so many times on YouTube, Netflix, all that. And then they were miserable because their parents wanted them to do that. So if they had that idea, that's great. I want to be a doctor because I want to help people. And then they get disappointed because the medical system is totally corrupt and evil and has all kind of problems. So we got to change that system before we start encouraging children to be doctors and all that, because that system is totally broken right now. As we said, in the last 2 years, the medical system is in bed with the mafia pharmaceuticals. The people of the world who have gone through this nightmare of
people
coronavirus.
People of the world, I'm telling you, I just gave you examples of what they want. Now, here's the thing. If all these things was copacetic, why do black folks always complain that we are the ones who suffer the most because we have lack of medical this, medical that, doctors, dentists in our communities? Per capita.
And that's the we that we can't apply because black folks in general are very compliant. The ones who are still on the plantation and slave mines, they're still wearing masks at this point, very compliant. So that's the we I don't associate with. You always talk about who's the we. I don't associate with that we black folks. I'm not compliant at all. I'm a rebel.
Well, you see, here we go again. It's not about you. We're talking in general. I should have withdrawn my experiences and positions out there. But the thing is, you educate for what you need. What is it that you're lacking? That's like A.G. Gaston in his book, Green Power. He said every morning he woke up, he said to himself, what do people need today? Then he worked and strived toward providing that, making it a economic venture. When he died, he was 100 millionaire strong. So that's just
okay.
The way it is.
Okay, so I looked at something that may be a little off topic, but Elon Musk just bought 9-something million shares or something of Twitter. That man, to me, is always thinking about what do we need, what do we need? And he's always advanced thinking technology and all that. Why in the world would he buy 9 million shares of Twitter? Let me think. How about a little freedom in the media? We need some freedom. This man's going to spend billions of dollars investing in a company, Twitter. So why would he do that? People are asking, why would he do that? Why would he do that? I think it has a lot to do with having the freedom to communicate and have social media platforms where you're not censored. That's my belief. Now, so you're talking about thinking about what do we need? What do I need to do? Well, here's the richest man in the world probably thinking the same way. What do we need? What do we need? The children of this world are also thinking that way. In their own little minds, these little children are thinking, they look around their families, their society, their schools, all that. They're also developing ideas of, like, what do we need? What do we need? So we got to listen to them and then guide them.
Well,
okay,
absolutely.
You think we need that?
Doctors treat problems. Engineers make sure the problem don't come back again.
Doctors treat symptoms. They don't treat problems. They treat symptoms with drugs. That's the problem.
Well, symptom is a problem. If you go to the bathroom and it burns when you pee, is that not a problem?
That's a symptom. It's a symptom of something else going on. But they don't do that. Their job is to just give you a drug to cover up. They'll stop your burning and your peeing with a drug, but you ain't fixing the problem.
If you got people trying to get from one side of the river to the other and they swim and half of them drown, well, you need an engineer to design a bridge so they don't have to swim in the water that's infested with crocodiles and alligators.
Yeah, Or a boat of some kind. You're right. Yeah, a boat of some kind. That's the problem solution. Yeah, we got to have people with those kind of minds who understand the process of problem solution and a psychology of adjustments. That's my dad's favorite, the class, psychology of adjustments. That was a basic class my dad taught me and my sisters when till he was 95 years old. He was always talking about psychology of adjustments, psychology of adjustments. And he wasn't a wealthy man, but he had a lot of wisdom in him. And every problem is to me about, okay, psychology of adjustment. Is this a brick wall? How do I get over it? How do I get around it? How do I go through it? Okay, what do I do next? And then once you solve that, let's go to the next adjustment. Life is full of that, in my mind, psychology
it's
of adjustment.
Like, it's Sacramento, they had problems with gangs. I say some problems will eliminate themselves. Just leave them alone. Let them kill up each other.
Yeah.
Then it won't be nobody left. Same thing in Chicago.
Right.
Let them kill up each other. Then you don't have to worry about that problem,
yeah,
nor expend monies toward alleviating that problem.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes time. It's a matter of patience and time to solve the problem. You can't come up with an actual solution. I agree. You just may have to wait. If it's not harming and people aren't suffering more and more, then maybe just waiting and seeing what happens from the time and the patience aspect of it. So, yeah, we have to re-educate, though, our children to think like this and not go along with this system, this totally broken system that is teaching an agenda of dependence and victim and entitlement and the we need reparations and all that bullshit. So yeah, we're re-educating.
Back
right
in the
here.
40s, India built what's called the ICT, Indian Technology School, I think it was, and they basically put these schools in provinces around the country, and they have a method of filtering children into those schools to become doctors, scientists, and so on and so on and so on. That's why come they lead the world in many areas of medicine. And also, like, optometry. Well, they had a problem with a lot of the Indians had cataracts. So what did they do? They came to the United States, had a process of bringing their students to the United States to learn optometry. And then they went back home and set up these ophthalmology points where you can find Indian performing the service and providing the service on beaches even. And these products that they are, techniques that they're using just as good as any other place in the world, in particular of America. The lenses that they replace, the defective natural lenses of the eye with, are as high quality as you find any place else. And they are performing cataract surgery for as cheap as $30. That's progress.
There's also ancient wisdom. There's a lot of historical holistic methods Indians have taught for years and years that's been suppressed. And there are a lot of problems that are going on with people's physical bodies can be solved in nature. And they suppress that so much now that you would have, well, let's go to the United States and go to Harvard or John Hopkins and see what they have to say. Well, that ain't the best solution all the time, to go to medical systems to solve a physical problem that's really a metaphysical spiritual problem. So I think we have to look at all aspects of healing, whatever is going on every level. It's invisible levels, there's physical levels, there's mental, spiritual levels. If we don't use all those holistic means, then we're going to end up with the same problem again. You're only covering it up for now. I was looking at cataracts. When you said cataracts, I looked in Louise Hay is the author of Mental Causes for Physical Illness. Cataracts has something to do with inability to see ahead with joy, dark future. Now, if you have that knowledge and wisdom about that, you're going to approach your cataract differently, trying to solve the emotional conflicts or the relationships in your life more than going to some medical system to see if they got a drug or some other surgery. Because the drug, let's admit, medical systems are about cut, burn, poison today. They cutting and having more surgeries, burning the hell out of people's bodies with radiation, and then the chemical burning them and poisoning them with chemotherapy, which weakens the heart. So we got to change the system. That's all I'm saying. These systems have been destroying it. In this last 2 years with the war against the virus, if we didn't wake up to the need to change the whole medical system, then we need to go back and start, go back to sleep, wake up in another century or something, because that was the whole lesson of this is look how destructive this whole system is in terms of creating a war against a virus that is already inside the body. And yet they did a great job with their propaganda and their fear tactics to get everybody wearing a damn mask, thinking you're going to help protect yourself, and then going to get an injection in your body that's going to create even more problems with all the chemicals and
well, the reason why come they're able to get away with that sheds light on yet another problem or condition, and that's education. Your children aren't being educated in the areas of biology as what you're speaking on with curtail.
Anatomy, right, exactly.
If they're not educated in biology and how things work, they're quite natural. When they get become an adult, they're going to be subjected to ideas that's going to cause them to wear a mask even if they're standing in the middle of a football field.
Yeah,
that's ignorance.
Exactly. Anatomy, that we need to be teaching our children anatomy, biology, physiology, so they take control of this body temple instead of being compliant with Fauci's and all these other assholes who are going to tell you that the way to conquer this is wear a mask and stay home. Oh, my goodness.
But
ignorance.
Ignorance
is the problem. Ignorance.
If that we have no knowledge on how to teach their children, because guess what? Well, hell, I was never taught that. Now where are you at? That child will grow up and be ignorant once again. Then their children will grow up to be ignorant once again. And then once again, once again, once again.
That's why there are many of us working to create a new system of education, and it starts at home. Starts at home. We got internet. We got YouTube. That's why in my YouTube venture, I'm going to have to include ways to stay healthy in a tiny house environment. How about that, L.A., ways to in a tiny house environment?
Yep, sounds good to me. Well, you can start your own system. Well, that's what homeschooling is all about. You create your own system.
Yeah, but you got to be able to homeschool.
Well, nowadays, though, with the tech, now you got, like, I got a next-door neighbor. It's a bunch of people that bring their kids over to their homeschool. So they got homeschool cooperatives now. So with people knowing more about it, you got more people with experience. And I'm sure even some homeschool systems, which are basically friends and neighbors. Yeah, you know.
That's the way it's supposed to be. Your politics,
right,
especially. And these politics fall along the line of one particular political party. And that's them damn Democrats. They don't want that. They come up with all kind of excuses in the form of jingles. Well, you want your child to be socially exposed, nurtured, conditioned. They have to learn friends. They have to be able to network. The hell with that. I don't want a dumb friend nor a dumb networking fool. So if you're going to homeschool, you have to be masterful in the subjects that is in high demand at the far end of their educational career, or know how to go out and research and provide those resources to their child. most of the time when you have these movements, I've seen blacks have coming on to all kind of auspices like African-centered curriculums and so forth. You go in them schools, all them kids are doing is basically learning how to be separate to somewhat. They're not getting down into no hard subjects because a lot of these schools are threatened to be closed because of lack of academic achievement. Case in point, that Betty Sizemore or Barbara Sizemore school there in Chicago, African-centered school, so they say. Hell, that school's been threatened to be closed because the kids can't do basic, when I say basic, state-required knowledge, which is nothing more than basic, like jumping rope. They can't perform that well. Now, it's not the child. It's the parents. It's the people that's running the school. Basically, the parents, because they send their child to that school without putting in demands of what the school should be teaching their children, that's going to lead them into the pathways of the future. Not the past. I say it again. Not the past.
Yeah, I agree. It's the parents who are challenging the whole thing. Parents need reeducating. The systems need torn down. We need to start over again. We need to be thinking more homeschool, collective, just all of that. That's why we got so much work to do. That's why this show and every show that is looking toward creating something different and new and better is what we all should pay attention to. Because we got a lot of work to do. This we got so many problems in, especially the urban areas. Oh my goodness, the black on black crime, if nothing else, is symbolic of a deep problem. And so the drugs and all that. There's so much work to do that we each are responsible. First of all, personal responsibility to have a strong mind, body, and soul to be able to direct these children to a better future. We are the directors now. If we have a healthy mind, body, and soul, if we as adults and seniors are doing drugs and taking injections and all that, we're not going to be much help. They're going to do their own thing on these tablets and computers and phones. Look at the phone, how addicted kids are, and we all are to these phones. That's what's going to be programming them if we don't be careful about helping them balance their time. Outdoors, fresh air, athletics versus indoor all the time with your laptop and your computer and your phone, they're going to go crazy. So we got our work cut out.
You're absolutely right. I was in a restaurant and seen a white man and woman come in with two girls. And every step that they made, they were looking at a phone. Looking at a phone.
Isn't that sad?
So Ignis has no respect for skin color.
Right.
And that's nothing more than a distraction. All this stuff about white supremacy and white and all the other cliches that go with it, nothing more than a distraction. That's all it is.
And our greatness comes out once we realize how distracted we've been. We can really perform and be great people, human beings. I don't care what color you are. As long as you're waking up to the fact, look at how we've been this whole Academy Award thing, distracted. In fact, I just say this about Academy Award. This is about looking in the mirror and seeing how do I mirror what just happened at the Academy Award. It's not about pointing fingers, in my opinion. Okay, oh, dear, how can I change? I don't want to be slapping people around, blah, blah, blah. So how can I change? Instead of people busy judging, complaining, and doing all this other stuff, distraction. We need to be educating our children. And, in fact, that would be a good lesson explaining about emotions and violence. Children, let's watch what happened at the Academy Award last Sunday. All right, what do you think about that, kids? They're smart. Now, what do you think about what just happened? Oh, well, I think that was a cartoon I just watched. Or I just played a video game like that. Yeah, you're right. Do you want to put that in your brain that you're going to react to somebody's words the way he just reacted?
Some of these games are centered around violence. shoot the teddy bear or shoot the dolphin, you get points. I understand that in one of the spring breaks, I don't guess, in the Carolina, they had a riot on the beach. These blacks. Did you hear about that, L.A.? So, where is that coming from? You know, I kind of believe what I hear some people say, that segments of, and this could probably apply to anybody, but let's talk about blacks. They say segments of the black population, the people are cursed. They got intergenerational curses over their head. Now, we can't say this, we can't put that in denial, because we know that there are all sorts of things that promote that, like voodoo and shamans and witchcraft and, you know, hanging garlic on the wall, putting a horseshoe over the, all kinds of things along those lines, because people believe in it. So apparently it must be some truth to it. Some of these folks just curse. No matter what the heck you do, it still don't come out right. You know, people have said that. I've tried everything. I'm tired. I've tried everything. So maybe that's what it is. Some of these folks just cursed. Maybe it's something that their ancestors done where their ancestors came from. You never know.
Well, the curse is following the same behavior that your ancestors did or performed or did, even though it hasn't produced anything productive or... Like you were saying, they get money. Okay, the ancestors were going after the government for this. We got this, we got that. And then they take the money and go spend it on drugs and alcohol. Nothing productive. So there's the curse for you, that you're following the same behavior that your ancestors followed that didn't produce anything positive or beautiful or different. You know, the fact that our ancestors, when they were slaves, were eating chitlins and all the other pig parts because that's what the master threw them in the plantation on the field. That's all they had, collard greens in the ground and all other weeds and pig parts. And then when you follow that same behavior today, you're not going to be very healthy. So
well, but you got people around the world that eat that stuff and they are healthy. They live longer than Americans do.
Well, not if you
And you know another thing too.
Emotions don't go, sad emotions, depressed emotions, angry emotions, fearful emotions don't go well with pig parts. They'll kill you. That'll kill you.
But I've seen weddings on the internet in Myanmar, and they had a wedding having fun, and they eating pig parts. In Africa, in Nigeria, Ghana, they eat pig parts.
You think they do that every day?
Yes, they do. Because when you look at the pig pen, they may have 20 in there. Come back the next week, they may have 5. They don't eat them.
But as long as you have joy and thanksgiving and gratitude with that type of diet, you might survive that. But low-frequency emotions like fear, anger, bitterness, hate, which a lot of people in the black community are carrying right now, that's the curse.
Even in Mexico... They got chitlin tacos, because they don't think nothing of it. I mean, that's what those people do. So we have to respect them. That's them. They've been doing it for time immemorial.
You think their lifestyles are as stressful as some of the urban areas where black people live and are eating that stuff?
I think in their environment, they have their own things to contend with. Every ethnic group within their environment, they have the things that they have to contend with. It's like those little girls that's rowing on a dugout canoe on huge lakes. Well, before they get to where they're going, they may run into a local storm, high wind that may swamp the boat. And as they're rowing, you got one child that's bailing out water so they don't sink. So that there is their own little stress that they contend with.
So there to me is a sign of being in nature versus being in an urban toxic environment where there aren't any trees, there aren't any, there's no water, there's no air flowing freely, all that. That plays a role too in your environment that you're in, whether it's toxic, full of the polluted air, tall buildings, concrete reservation versus out in the water, rowing, trying to get the water out of the boat, sun shining on you. Oh, big difference. Your body can handle that.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that because in those urban areas, that's the temperature is elevated because the sun, the heat is being absorbed in the material of the buildings, the sidewalk, the blacktop paved streets. Hell, you'd be living, you are subjected to that heat up until 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. Whereas in the countryside, well, you, the temperatures don't get that high, especially the ambient temperature. So you're absolutely right along those lines.
And they say you won't even digest meal very well if you're sitting at that table angry, in fear, or hateful. Your body is not going to even digest that very well. But imagine you're eating that out in the sun, on a boat, with friends, laughing, having a good time. Your body's in such a high vibration that just that stuff passes right through easily. You digest it because your frequency is so much higher to get break down all those pig parts and get them in there, digest them, use them what you need, and then you're out. But congestion and all that constriction of hate and anger and bitterness, you're going to have problems.
But, you know, those environments is not for everybody and shouldn't be, because if you take people out of one environment like you just got through describing and put them out into the lush green and so on, so on, so on, they will look at the lush and natural green as weeds and want to cut them down and come back with the concrete and blacktop and make things like it was where they left. And sooner or later, it will be a repetition of disaster.
Well, that's what good books are about. When you're in the transition phase from suffering and pain and sickness and disease, and you know you need to change your life, and you wake up to, oh, my goodness, I've been doing this, this, and this all these years, and look at me, I'm in the hospital, I got cancer, I'm on this, I'm dying. What can I do to change my life? There's a book for you. Here's a book. Somebody had the same journey you're on. They went out in nature and just started doing other, growing food and all. That's the type of information and knowledge people need if they're going to go out in the nature from an urban area. And usually they're going because they've been suffering in pain and they got the nature is kicking them out of the urban area to get well.
But those are good points. You know, in one of my rooms in my house, I turned it into a botanical garden. I had all sorts of plants, cactus, succulents, fly traps, rabbit foot ferns. I used to love rabbit foot ferns. You know, the basket ferns and the roots come out and wrap around the bottom. They have hair on them, hairy.
What?
They had the light and all that stuff. I used to love to do that. I used to store my garden on the kitchen table, my corn and other vegetables that I was going to plant. I did that for several years, and I stopped because I had to do other things. I had to move away from it.
Well, that's
but I
part
like
of
to watch
the
things, bro.
That's part of our re-education system is getting that knowledge in the kids and then they'll give them a choice if they want to do that or something else. But at least they know they have a choice.
In some of those environments, you got plants. Not only do they eat flies, but they're big enough where they'll eat a whole human.
Wow. And see, they need that type of knowledge, the kids today, because I think they can appreciate nature more and how we can do very, we don't need to do a lot with nature, just culture and cultivate it and enjoy it and let it do itself, do whatever nature does.
I used to take kids out in the woods, bought tents, and a half dozen of tents and load them up. We leave Friday and stay gone all weekend out in the woods.
Yep.
Cooking, exploration.
Need. And see, that's
so
what
the environment
Jakes,
that you're in.
That's
yeah,
what
it's the environment
Jakes,
that you're in.
T.D. Jakes talked about that very thing, Pianki. When he sat down with his wife on their anniversary, they thought about how they had raised their children. And they talked to their children about, what do you remember about, you know, how we raised and all that? And he said they didn't remember all the stuff they bought them with their money and what they, the material things. They remember what they did with them, the moments. They remember the moments more than anything. I remember we had this moment, blah, blah, blah. I remember that. He said they didn't talk at all about all the money that he spent and all the material things. So it's those moments and memories that we got to get back to with kids, not buying them a new tablet and a new phone and all that. That's not going to last. But the moments with us is what is going to help them be better people, I think. So have you written your book, Pianki? Where's your book? Is it coming out soon?
No, I'm not going to write no book. I've been in places in Africa, like in Ethiopia, for instance. Well, in one area, would be get to the top of this mountain town. You have to go around the mountain about 7 times. Then at night, when you overlook in the valley, you see all these different campfires. One there, one over there, one right there, one way over there. And different sounds is coming from each campfire because the people are gathered around and enjoying themselves. Different smells of food being cooked. And if you go into a building during the afternoon when the sun is out, you're in there carrying out your business or whatever, and when you come out at night and your eyes is trained at level but look up in the sky, you duck because the stars look like you're going to bump your head on.
Wow.
They're just that big and clear. And you can actually see comets streaked across the sky.
So why don't you think you need to share these experiences in a book?
No, books are made for certain people. I don't like to write like that. I like to read them, but I don't like to write like that.
Okay.
But now
well,
with the advent of people's travels with the internet, YouTube, where they put copies of their recorded experiences, that's a great thing. You know, another thing, too, it dispels a lot of rumors and teachings that we have been exposed to, which is proving them to be erroneous. They are wrong. They're not right.
Wait a minute. What are you saying is wrong and not right?
All the way people have been taught, made to believe. Basically what you're looking at is human beings.
You mean in general what people have been taught and made to believe?
Yeah, like some people say that black folks is all spiritual and melanin helps this and helps that. That's just not true. There's no ethnic group of people on the planet no more, quote unquote, spiritual than any other. They have within their community, within their society, what they consider to be vices, because good and bad is subjective. What's bad for you here, you go someplace else, it's good. They marry as young as 13 year old in some societies. Well, here in the United States, that's bad. But there it's good because their society lifestyle, which goes back hundreds, if not thousands of years, have become acclimated and accustomed to those lifestyles. Leave them alone.
But as we move into the fourth and fifth dimension, which is directed by the planetary movements and the universe, this is something that's already written in the books and all that. There's nothing right or wrong, good or bad. Everything is here for a lesson. So when you say right, wrong, good, bad, that's third dimension thinking, reality. And as the planets and the solar system and all that is moving our thoughts and consciousness into a new dimension, we can choose not to label things good, bad, wrong, right, but I was like, ooh, what's the lesson? Why did they tell black people that they were spiritual and they have their melanin is powerful and all that? Well, there's a reason for that, because the African ancestors did things by looking at the sky. They judged the timing by the sky. They looked at the stars. They looked at the planet movement. African knowledge and wisdom was not about looking at some paper telling what's today, what time is it. Their wisdom was about sky, reading the planets in the sky. So is it wrong to say your melanin African heritage is more spiritual? Everybody who connects to African wisdom of the planets and the stars and that, they have some power in them, because that's the original knowledge that built the planets, built the cities and all that. So I don't see it as wrong or right. It's just what it was and how we can grow from it or not, if you choose to believe that. Some people might even not even believe it, but that's been written down in history.
African wisdom and knowledge may have contributed to their societies, but you go someplace else on the planet, and they had the same thing. The Eskimo had wisdom and knowledge about the thaw and ice and what it's about to do and to prepare. You go to the Himalayas in the mountains, that's up 13,000 feet. Those people have also wisdom and knowledge. They have their spiritual aspects of themselves. Africans are people that with black skin did no more build the world than others who helped build the world too. They built their particular societies. That's the way it was. People traveled and took ideas and notions around the world. They traded what this set had that the ones that's arriving there didn't have what they came from. They traded back and forth. That's how that all began. Those human beings.
And that's right, Tianqi, and I agree with you. That's why it's so important to travel around the world and see other cultures and understand what you just said, that look how much all these people around the world contributed to the societies of today. No one culture contributed all and everything to what we see today. You're so right. That just highlights the importance of travel for children to be well-rounded and have a balanced, healthy perspective on other human beings and what they do and why they do it and why they react. If you travel, if you stay in your little community all your life, you're going to have some hard times ahead of you, because you're not going to see anything like you just described, that everybody in this planet contributes to their cultures and their societies in a very unique way, so we can respect each other. We can respect all these different cultures and not fight with them and drop bombs on them. But we're in this place where egos have taken over, and the military-industrial complex is trying to rule the planet, but we're going to change all that with our thinking and this new generation, I hope.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I really do. And human beings learn from nature. They learn from animals. That was their first teacher, animals, insects.
I have to share this with you. I had a monarch butterfly land in my yard yesterday. And I know a lot about monarch butterflies because they have a very short lifespan, and how they travel every year. There's a documentary on monarch butterflies, how they travel every year. They migrate every year, the same pattern. Somebody traced their pattern every year. And I thought, to have that monarch butterfly land on this just meant to me the sacredness of this property. Somebody told me that I was on sacred land. I'm like, yeah. I'm renovating a shed. I renovated a shed. But I didn't think much of it. That monarch butterfly, like you said, nature is the best teacher to confirm some of the things we already know and some of the things we hear and we might doubt. But when nature shows up like that, this beautiful monarch butterfly, I'm like, whoa, I was dumping stuff in my compost pile, and on the way back, I looked down at the ground. I'm like, whoa, that looks like a monarch butterfly. And his wings were closed, And if you've seen them, you know once they open up their wings, it's like this beautiful geometric pattern of dots and triangles and all this. And I said, okay, open your wings, open your wings. I stood there with my phone, open your wings. And he opened up his wings, and I was like, whoa, just blew me away. So, yeah, there's kind of an ending to the show Nature, Best Teacher in the World. Taught me about geometry, life, truth, migration, animals, everything in those few minutes of watching and observing this beautiful creature called a monarch.
I've got a question about nature. In relationship to the criminal justice system, all right, when a female or young lady begins to menstruate, which that could be, 9 years old, 10 years old, 11 years old, depends on the female in question, that is nature saying that this particular female has determined you're old enough, you're a woman, and you're old enough to reproduce. Now, my question is, should R. Kelly be in jail because what he's accused of, all those women, all those females were actually biologically women according to nature, biology. But man's law says, no, it's different.
Well,
so who's
Eric,
right, who's wrong? Is it nature's law the highest or man's law?
You answer your question right there. You in a society that has what's called laws, man's law,
right,
whatever you want to say it.
Yep, there you go. There's your answer. And I would say something else about women. You know, my grandmother was married. Not just my grandmother, but her mother before her and her aunts and all that were married at 14 years old. A lot of girls today are menstruating early because of all the hormones in the meat they're eating. The chickens and all these animals have so many hormones. If they're eating fast food and all that, they're going to probably be menstruating earlier than usual. And or they're being over-sexualized earlier. So what we can agree that this society we live in has changed the laws of nature not being applied over the laws of man, because that's really what should rule is the law of nature, but we got laws of man ruling because money and all the things you talk about, agendas.
My grandmother was, mother's mother, she was 15 and married.
Yeah.
Seven kids, never got divorced.
And that was the law of nature. Your body was saying that the man, you attracted some man, you know, let's get together, let's have a baby. Okay, you're having a baby at 14. Nothing. I bet the whole community was having babies at 14, maybe.
Mary, the mother of Jesus, was probably about 14 years old when she had him.
Delaware,
she was not a 30-year-old woman.
The age is 9. Did you know that?
In
Delaware, it was 9 years old.
Now,
that's
I can understand in the complex Western society where, you know, you've got to earn a certain amount of income on, you know, and you have to have the skill set to live in a New York, St. Louis, Orlando, or where have you. Okay, so it's not wise for a 12, 13, or 14-year-old in our society, just based
not
on
in
what
our
you
society,
need, just to live.
Those females in those societies were way more knowledgeable on what it took to maintain a home compared
That's
to
true.
What
yeah.
you have today.
That's true. You're absolutely
yeah.
right.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
My grandmother, who had 7 kids, and my grandfather was blind, sometimes she had to go out and fish, go to the creek or whatever, New Orleans, wherever they got New Orleans back then. She had to go catch fish to feed the family. Because my grandfather was blind, he couldn't work.
Okay, so look at the influence that R. Kelly and a lot of these other musicians have now because of the internet, because of the phones, and all that. So even if you've got a 9-year-old girl who is not even interested in sex or anything, if they open up their internet, the phone number, and they see R. Kelly and all these other girls swooning and being wanting to go to bed with R. Kelly, guess how much influence you're going to have trying to teach them to stay home and wait till they're 15, 16 before they think about marriage. So look at the influences that our young people have now in front of them.
You're not going to be able to do it because R. Kelly is carrying the genes of old within him, and they play out. I mean, that's just some biologically, people biologically don't move on. That's what it is in Africa. Those tribes won't move forward. You got the same thing in Amazon. They won't move forward. They are staying where they are, and that's perfectly fine. They're on the Andaman Islands off of India, the Jarawa. They won't move forward. So you got people who's doing things, and it's not revealed in media or in text, but that's what you're looking at. You're looking at a person who has a DNA biological makeup part of them that won't move forward. So, yes, he's going to have a tendency to mess with today, which is unacceptable, but back then it was perfectly normal, girls of young age.
Right. Okay, so think about this, guys. Is that good, bad, wrong, or right? It's an opportunity to teach our young people about choices and recognizing energy and recognizing personalities and recognizing people who don't want to move forward. These are all good lessons for our kids to learn if we can be teachers for them. We don't say it's good, bad, wrong. R. Kelly is a perfect lesson for everybody. He does what he did. He made some of the most awesome music, influenced us with our stress levels with his music. So I don't think anything he's done is good, bad, wrong, or right. But we can learn from him about in every area of our life, well, if we have the mind to teach children about what happened there.
Then, too, you know, you got another group that want to go back. L.A. wants to go back. Talks about it all the time. For whatever reason, you got those who are there for it, don't like it eventually, and they want to go back. You got people that move back to the wilderness. You got people that's out in Alaska living in the forest where they built a shelter, and they living perfectly fine. That's what they want
to
do.
You got the Amish. You got the Mennonites, too.
They're not going to move forward. They're going to stay where they are, and they're perfectly okay.
Is it not moving forward, Pianchi, or they're not? They choose not to participate in certain aspects, like, for instance, When I think about the Amish and the Mennonites, because they build their own personal residence, I'm looking at them, you know what? They choose not to get involved with the banking industry. They want nothing to do with a mortgage. Nothing.
They wouldn't take stimulus checks neither.
I didn't take it either. I didn't take a stimulus
check. The Amish would not take stimulus checks. They gave them to some charity or whatever.
And I that's a good question, L.A., is it not moving forward or just wanting a more simple life? Because what's happening, I see, is our lives are becoming complicated with all these choices of technology. My son is moving fast forward at warp speed. Every time I look up, he put a smoke detector in my tiny house that lights up when I move. And he can get it on his phone if there's a smoke or a fire, he's going to go into his phone.
I'm glad you brought it up because if we go back to our parents, grandparents' generation, okay, number one, well, even parents' generation, a lot of us have, well, all of us, everybody on this phone has got an internet connection, okay,
right.
And we pay for that. They didn't have that, okay. Cable boxes. They didn't have a cable box. Okay. So there's a number of things that we take for granted today that they just didn't have. Even probably all three of us on the phone. In high school, on a Friday, the weekends, basically, it was, you know, there were three channels. That was it.
Well, you know, people have to be
And a lot of people went out and spent more time outdoors, too, instead of, I mean, we weren't in front of, I had a TV set, but that was it. The TV went off. What time did the TV go off when they started to play the Star Spangled Banner?
Midnight.
Yeah, but now we can binge watch all night on Netflix or YouTube.
Yeah, well, you live in a different society today. I know
right.
people that moved to Africa back in the 70s, and they had enough money to live comfortably. But inflation is starting to kill them, where they've got to involve themselves in the other things in order
now,
to supplement
what
they don't have enough of.
Inflation is a serious ass-kicker.
It is.
I think that's one topic that should be mandatorily taught kids from first grade, some kind of simplified way, till 12. Because if you don't plan on the cost of living in the future, it'll overtake you.
And that's what I say, high taxes. That's them damn Democrats. That's one of their damn pledges. Raise taxes every time they can get. They actually kill development. They kill progress. They kill moving forward. Or even those, I tell you what, they even go against those that want to run away from that. Those that want to live meager. They kill that.
But that makes sense if you know that Biden is in the pockets of the Chinese Communist Party. That's what they're trying to do is destroy our economy, destroy America. But the Chinese are buying all this land. They're doing all this because Biden is their puppet. That we can clearly see the agenda now of him destroying America and more taxes for because the Chinese Communist Party are controlling him. So that makes perfect sense to me.
Biden or no Biden. Inflation and high taxes, we were talking about earlier. I think you won't hear me. Pianki brought it up. Like a lot of these social programs, not even before we even get on this reparations kick, who's going to pay for it? And because eventually it's got to come to a head.
Well,
right.
Everything you create is going to have a repercussion in the future. It ain't going to go back in the past. You're trying to correct what happened in the past by imposing things on the future because you today going to receive it, eat it up, expend it, but it's those in the future that's going to have to give account for it.
Well, right. we gotta also think about the technology of the future is Skylink. You know, I don't know if you heard how Elon Musk set up Skylink for the Ukrainians to use Wi-Fi. That's the future. There's going to be a satellite that's going to control everything, Skylink, and it's going to have protection for fraud and all this. They've been developing this for a while, and Elon Musk seems to be like a messenger to reveal some of this stuff that's going to happen in the future. So we don't really have to worry about so much inflation and who's going to pay for it and all that because the whole financial system is being recalculated, readjusted. Just look up Skylink. And that's our future, which is going to have a big influence on everything.
They put satellites up for countries. But that would be very good because now you will see what's going on in Ukraine is not what the news make it out to be.
Exactly. Yes. We know that.
Putin is not the evil dictator that they make him out to be. He's not going along. He's not going along with globalists. And another point, those people in that country, and that's a huge country, it spans about 13 time zones, they've experienced these things in the past of invasions, conquerors, and so on and so on and so on. And they are gun shy, as a modern way to talk about it. They are gun shy of those things. They're highly suspicious. They're overprotective. And then when you got groups inside of Russia that's protesting against what he's doing, those are CIA-inspired protests.
Right.
Just like the communists tried to inspire overthrow in black people going all the way back to the 1920s. Then again, it spurred up in the 1930s, then once more in the 1950s.
And if you watch CNN for just a few minutes, they back on this Russia is bad. Russia is horrible. Russia. All I saw at my nephew's Airbnb is a few minutes of CNN talking how bad Russia is and how good Ukraine is. And so you know something's up when CNN, all they talking about, they trying to get the war started. They trying to promote Ukraine versus. So, Pianki, I'm with you on that. As I've seen enough about the bioweapons labs in Ukraine, Biden profiting in Ukraine, his son profiting in Ukraine, CIA profiting in Ukraine, and then they try to make Putin look bad. Man, I'm not buying that. Sorry.
Yeah. So
that's why we got to turn off the media. Do not listen to the media. They got an agenda that is to promote lies, deception, and confusion and distraction.
Well, you know, you're right. So you're going to have to go ahead and establish your away from everybody and send us pictures so we'll know how to do it. And you just may look up one day and here come L.A. to be your neighbor.
Exactly, because L.A. and I have the same mind to have a minimalist lifestyle so we don't have all the stress that some people, not all, some people have when they complicate their lives with all this technology, bills on top of bills, debt on top of debt, and so on and so on, and that creates more stress, which is what causes disease, and we'll be out in our minimalist lifestyle, drinking a cup of tea every morning, enjoying our gardens and fixing up our tiny houses. And then people will come and join us eventually when they get totally stressed out.
And you're almost done with your tiny house renovation, aren't you?
I am, and I just had a big contribution for my insulation. So my insulation is going in this month. And only thing I need is two doors. If anybody wants to donate two new doors for me, it'll be pretty much complete.
Have you checked out, there's a thing called FreeCycle. Up in your neck, it's all over the country, but type in FreeCycle. That's where people give away a lot of stuff on Recycle. The thing is, you got to hopefully see it first be one of the first ones to see it, and then you got to go pick it up.
Is that FreeCycle?
Well, you know, doors and windows not that expensive. If you go to a manufacturer and size them out, you can probably buy a door for $75, a solid door, too.
I need two doors.
Well, check out FreeCycle. They got a local one right up there where you are, FreeCycle. And there's probably some type of Salvation Army or a Goodwill outlet where they a lot of contractors or developers that had, you know, leftover materials,
right,
they donate.
Right.
You can get stuff from there. You got to buy it, though, but you can buy it on the cheap.
Yeah, it's not an urgent thing because my house is surrounded by a fence that's tall enough. Nobody can really see me back here behind my son's house.
Mm.
I don't have lots of doors.
What are you looking for, two exterior doors?
Yeah, two exterior, but not wood either because the wood just gets destroyed in this weather. But, you know, poly.
You've been checking out, Facebook Marketplace Craigslist.
OfferUp. I'm on there all the time looking, but they don't have what I need yet.
What, have you checked out Facebook?
They don't have the right.
What about Facebook
Marketplace? Yeah, it's not a high priority right now because then I'd have to go pick them up and all. But at least I'm 90% complete, and my son keeps trying to air condition my place with his little ideas, which is kind of nice. But once
you
I get my
a little portable one for your place. You know, on wheels.
I do not like air conditioning. It gets too
cold. Oh, okay.
Cold.
Well, just deal with a fan.
I have a
I'm
going to
tell you who probably has two doors for you.
Who's that?
Maybe even for a free price, but I know you won't. I know you don't want to. You probably don't want to call him. Brother Eli.
Who is that? Thank you for the advice. No, thank you. All right.
Because I'm sure he runs across stuff like that every week. Or, you know, that plumber guy, you know? The plumber guy that, you know, he knows people too. Okay, anyway, I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you all. Have a good rest of the day.
You too.